guys, and welcome to the Guardians of the MCU. It's your host, Lizzie, and tonight, Sheba and I are running down our favorite moments of Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. And let me just tell you, there were a lot of favorite moments. Hi, Sheba.
Oh my God, so many.
So many.
Hello, how are you, Lizzie?
Oh my God, I'm so excited to talk about this movie with you. I have been, like, off the grid a little bit. I started a new job at SeaWorld. I'm in costuming and I'm sort of got vampire hours. So I haven't been podcasting with you guys and I missed you.
I know. I missed you too.
So when Tim was like, oh, Sheba and Liz, you're going to have to do it by yourselves. I was like, oh, this is our chance, Sheba.
It's our moment.
This is our time. We're taking over.
It really is. There's going to be nobody to stop us.
Nobody can stop us. We are unstoppable. No. Partly because Tim and John have not seen the movie yet. There's a lot of, as we've talked about on the show leading up to this moment, the concern around COVID, the theaters only kind of thing. The concern is very valid. I went to a showing that was the open caption on the screen. And there was like nobody in there. And I went at the last minute because I don't want to take a seat from somebody who needs open caption on the seat on the screen. But I went like 10 minutes before the showing started and just took like a random seat in the middle of nowhere. And there were like 20 people in the theater. So I felt very comfortable about that. Yeah.
For our theaters, we go in and we book them in advance. And then once you've booked a spot, it blocks off everything else like within a certain amount of space around you.
Yeah, that's
so,
how ours are too.
So I didn't, because we had D box, like the moving seats, and we were all the way in the back of our row, and I didn't know how many people were actually in our theater until the end, and everybody got up and was leaving. I'm like, there's a lot of people, like not a lot to make me panic because they were separated and far away, but there were quite a lot more people than when I went to watch the Suicide Squad. So I was like, oh, there's a lot of people.
Right.
I didn't even know all these people. But I felt it because I was wearing my mask.
I think you guys will talk about it on the show, the like regular show, but the box office numbers have been so encouraging despite a pandemic. So I love to see that, even though like I really took a lot of care with like deciding to go and when to go and finding a theater that was super empty. And you took a lot of care. I think we're all being very vigilant, but also we want to support this movie so much.
Exactly. I was like, of all the movies, I'm like, I will take a risk. I will take a risk with this just because it means a lot to the people that made the movie, for people, for representation. But, you know, even though I'm not East Asian, I'm not Chinese, but it still is nice to see a person of color in a big movie like this. And I'm always here to support it. So I'm like, yep, I will make a risk going to it. And then tomorrow I'm going with my siblings and my cousin because they're like, we want to see it. And I'm like, I'll see it again. So I'm going again.
I literally went again last night or the night before to the same open caption showing. And I like, what happens is you do have to reserve your seat, but because it was the open caption showing, it was just so empty. And I think like the open captions just deterred a lot of people. Whereas for me, I was like, love it. A lot of the movies already captioned. So who cares?
Exactly. And I watch most of my movies and shows with closed captioning on it anyways. So
yeah,
that big difference.
Yeah. So that's kind of like my consideration going into it. We're kind of working off the cuff here because we're just so excited. We're diving right in. So, I think we should start with just like first impressions. Like when you walked out of the theater, what were you thinking and feeling?
I was so happy. I mean, I was happy throughout the entire movie. I was like, you know, just like punching the air, squealing, clapping a few times silently as I could anyways. My whole row, all my friends, we were all clapping and cheering, kind of a little quietly laughing. And so as soon as we left, we were all just so happy with how well the movie was made, because we all had high expectations and they were surpassed. Like I was just so happy. I'm like, I can't even put into words properly how happy I was with how the movie had been presented.
I think it's interesting to be in this era of the MCU because we've surpassed the time where we kind of think, oh, that's a long shot, right? Like, we have high expectation of every property coming through. It's not like when Ant-Man came through and people were like, well, or when Guardians came through and people were like, I don't know. It's like, no, it's Marvel. It's going to be good. And so it's like the bar is so high and it jumped it with leaps and bounds for me. Like, I was like tearing up so much in the middle of this movie just because of the sheer like beauty of it. I walked out and the first thing I thought was like, holy crap, if a superhero movie and a fairy tale, like a beautiful Chinese fairy tale, had a baby, like a Marvel baby, it's this movie. Because it's so rooted in like mythology and beauty and like just the like imagery and the colors and everything. And then also it's got this superhero grounding in the MCU that we love. So it was just the melding of so many different beautiful things. And I just walked out and I was like, I'll have to see that again as soon as humanly possible. I'm just blown
literally
away.
As soon as the movie ended, I was like, no, play it. Just replay it. I'm just, you know, sitting here. It's fine. I have to go to school tomorrow, but it's just replay it real quick. It was literally everything.
Can you run that back?
Action.
Run it back.
While having action scenes, and you were like, oh my gosh, it's so, and I'm sure we'll go into specific detail about specific scenes in a bit, but there were just so many. Yeah, and like I just was smiling, or like I said, clapping, cheering. It just, there were so many emotions.
So many. Okay, let's start with cast. I want to save Simu for the end just because I feel like let's build up to him because I just feel so strongly about him right now. And I think we need to work up to it.
Yep.
Let's talk about Tony Leung because I don't actually know a lot of his films, but I mean, it's his first American crew he's worked with, and he is a legend, you know, in the martial arts space. And the way that I'm about to go down a deep dive of Tony Leung movies, like, I'm deeply obsessed with his performance in this film.
It was so perfect. Like, there was that moment, you know, when he's fighting with his wife, well, his soon to be wife, and they're just the way he kind of like gives a little, the little smirk. I'm pretty sure I was like, oh, I'm like blushing. And I'm like, he's not even doing this to me. And I feel like, oh, like, okay.
Like, it was so romantic. And like, so like there was this beautiful chemistry between him and the mother, and that part was so beautiful. I died in that whole sequence is like gorgeous. I think that is, I know we'll get into the breakdown of the fights though, but I think that fight between her and him, and then the callback later between him and Shang-Chi are my favorites, just because of like the mirroring the moves, the sort of like Shang-Chi like getting his bearings on who he is and who he wants to be fighting the dad, but also just the sheer beauty of the movement. Like, there's, I love when in like a kung fu or martial arts movie, when it's not like they're actually landing punches, but one person has sort of like jumped ahead and is just dodging them. I freaking love when that happens.
And it was just perfect. Just like it really was like two people dancing, but also fighting. And it was just beautiful to watch especially with the setting of Talo. It was like, just, it was so beautiful. I just sat there going, this is so pretty. And her outfit, it was like this green kind of outfit with some like goldish beige pants.
And her mask. That was like so intricately like, oh, beautiful. Yeah, the costuming in this was so fantastic. I loved that costume that Fala is wearing is like a complete standout, obviously. But I also love, and we'll maybe we're skipping ahead. This is how we're gonna just get on board with it, because this is how we are. But I also loved Shang-Chi and his sister's costumes went from their mother at the end.
Yeah. Oh, it was so love. Like, I loved how they incorporated the dragon scales in there.
Yeah, the heart of the dragon and the red, but also she got the silver, which was so badass.
Yeah. And I even loved Zhai Ling's, Shang-Chi's sister's outfit when they go to the fighting ring. Mm-hmm. Her black outfit and that cape thing that she's wearing. I need that in my life. Thank you. One of each, please.
With the crop top underneath and the wider pants. Yes.
So cool. I was like, I'm I'm really enjoying the fight scenes, but I also want this outfit.
Yeah, 100% deeply obsessed. The other thing I want to say about Wenwu / Tony Leung and just what he brings to the character is that I feel like with so many of our Marvel bad guys, we get sort of like a one dimensional mm-hmm. situation. And because it's connected to family, and because at the end, it's not like, yay, my dad's gone. It's you felt the loss, even though they're fighting and Shang-Chi really knows what he has to do in this moment. It's still not like a triumphant loss by any means. You feel that so much. And there's this one moment when Wu hears his wife calling, and it's obviously the darkness, the dweller in darkness, but he makes this like panicked, confused face. And it was just that one look. I felt it to my core. Like, he's so good.
Yeah. And literally every moment, from the beginning, you were a little terrified of him as a character, as being quote unquote the Mandarin, just right. How he was going through his life, living thousands of years, doing whatever he wanted to kind of thing. And then the minute he had that shift in personality, when he meets, he's like, I'm good. I don't need to do all of this life of crime anymore. I'm just going to stay and take care of my family. And this is my most important priority. Just, you could really see how big of a change he did. And Tony Leung did such a good job in portraying those emotions and those feelings. And even getting to see afterwards when he loses his wife and she gets killed and she's gone. Just that sudden shift in personality that as well, and how it has deeply affected him. It was really he did such a good job with it. Like, he was a villain where I was like, at the beginning I was like, oh, okay, he's a bad guy. But then when they introduced that humanity to him, I was like, oh, okay, he's not such a bad, horrible person.
Yes. It's super, super layered. And I love that montage where it was like the four of them, sort of doing Tai Chi together, but then also cut to them doing like Dance Dance Revolution, to them watching a movie together. And it's like, you really see such a soft side of him, and that he has this is what he's sort of like willing to give up the power for the family. And then because of the consequences of his life, his family essentially being taken away from him is what causes him to turn back to the power, which I think we can all kind of understand that motivation. It's not, I'm evil for the sake of being evil. You know, I think it's especially after having experienced love the way he did, maybe for the first 1,000 years, we can say it's just a power hungry situation where he's just conquering, and who knows? That's tough to say. How do the rings affect him? How does having that much power affect a person? It's getting a little philosophical, but these are the kinds of things I think about. But it's after he loses that connection to love, you can easily see how a person might turn to the dark side, some might say.
And it kind of reminded me, at least the 10 rings, I know we're jumping out of the characters and just the 10 rings in general, but it kind of reminded me a little bit about how the One Ring in Lord of the Rings kind of affects people. That's kind of the similar connection I was getting from it, was that it kind of slowly ate away at him. And when he put it away, it was like, okay, you know what? It's not affecting me anymore. It's fine. But then when he put him back on again, he was easily susceptible to the darkness, or the bringer of darkness, or the evil that was there and hidden literally in the darkness.
Well, and there's that one part where Michelle Yao's character says, like, is he wearing the rings? And Shang-Chi says he's been wearing them ever since she died. And so, like, you get the sense that that does affect him in some way.
It exactly.
Power yeah. always affects the person, even if it's not like the ring where it's like a metaphysical power outside of that person. Having that power affects you. That's why exactly. those like metaphors are so beautiful and powerful. Because it's true in real life as well. You don't need a 10 ring for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's skip to Fala Chen, because her character also is like, her fighting style in this movie was so graceful and gorgeous. And like, I love how they pair that with Tony Leung's style in that mm-hmm. scene.
Exactly. Like, just the way, like you said, it's so graceful. It's artistic. It has a lot of rhythm and movement to it, just like a dance, pretty much. Which is why when they fight together, it's almost like an aggressive style versus like a more graceful style. And yeah. it's just like that, even just like that footwork, that simple footwork that where she slides the foot around. Yeah. It was like yeah. it was so beautiful. And I saw a TikTok. Where somebody said that, you know, after Shang-Chi, this is what we were doing. And literally it's just people like doing that little foot maneuver. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what I was thinking.
That's all of us. We all want to just go outside in the snow and practice.
Right. Honestly, I was like, yep. And so I think somebody in the comments was like, I literally left the movie and was like, well, Googled Kung Fu places near me or something like that. And I was like, yeah, pretty accurate.
Literally did that. Yes, for sure. Of course, like 100%. But yeah, I loved sort of like the way that her character and then her sister, Michelle Yao, and then Shang-Chi in the end all did that movement, and how grounded it was in like family, but also in like Ta Lo, and also in like opposing what Tony Leung sort of like stood for, what Wen Wu stood for. So I loved that, like, that the callbacks of even the movements throughout the movie, yes. like when, you know, when Shang-Chi goes to use the real closed fists and sort of like, and then Michelle Yao's just like, no, open it up. That's not how we do it. And I love that, the mixture of yeah. of Wen Wu and Lei Ke Wu. I love that. I love that so much. And I just think that Fala brought so much to that role, and she's not in it as much as, you know, a lot of the other people, but there's so much that she gives in her moments exactly. through her movement that is just, oh, gorgeous.
And like, even just the moment, that scene we have with her and younger Shang-Chi, where she's explaining, you know, you have to go, I'll take care of it, don't worry, kind of thing. Just the softness to her and the way she spoke with, you know, with Shang-Chi and even with Wen Wu, just, you can really tell how much love she has for everyone around her. And I think that goes to the actress herself. It like it really speaks volumes to who she is as a performer.
Yeah. So next, I want to skip to Michelle Yao, because if we're talking about Tony Leung and his sort of impact in this, you know, martial arts space, we have to talk about Michelle Yao's impact as well, because these are like the two legends. They're mm-hmm. legends. And I have loved Michelle Yao forever and ever and ever and ever. And any movie she ever comes, I mean, obviously I haven't seen, like, she's been in a lot of movies that are not American yeah. films. I have seen all of them. I've seen some, because I have mm-hmm. gone down some Michelle Yao vortexes. But anything she's been in over here, I've seen it, because I adore her.
Oh, I love her too. Like, when I first saw her in Crazy Rich Asians, I was like, who is this beautiful woman? And I need more of her in everything. Between her and Gemma Chan, I was like, thank you, just everybody, please put them in all the things and I will watch all of them. But yeah, in this, she is outstanding, as she is in all of her other movies that I've watched her in. And it's been probably like, this is the third movie I've seen her in. But she brings she always brings a certain grace to the characters that she's playing. Just her style, or the way she speaks, because at least so far, the characters I've seen her in have always been really graceful. And I just, I don't know, there's something about her, that grace, that makes her even more beautiful, I guess, if that makes any sense. But I'm a big fan.
Yeah, she, I think probably, I haven't seen everything she's ever been in, but the first thing I probably ever saw her in was Tomorrow Never Dies. She's a Bond girl. And that always stood out to me. Yeah, I'm a huge James Bond fan. I was raised on every James Bond movie by my father. And so when I saw her I don't love the Bond girl trope. I'm not a huge fan of the Bond girl trope, but I felt she didn't fit into it. I felt she was such an outlier in the Bond girl world because she was powerful and she was strong and she made really strong choices and James didn't like run roughshod over her. And so there was something about her and Tomorrow Never Dies came out in like 97. I loved her. I was like 15 maybe. I was 15. Yeah. And I've never forgotten that. That was, I think, the first thing I ever saw her in, and I've never forgotten it. And ever since, it's just, if she's in a movie, it's immediately something I want to see. I mean, she's in Memoirs of a Geisha. I saw Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, obviously Crazy Rich Asians. And then when I heard she was going to be in this, I was like, no, that's all I need to know. I'm done. I already wanted to see it. No, I want to see it 100 times more because of Michelle Yeoh.
I totally forgot that she was in Memoirs of a Geisha. Or yeah. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And I watched both of them, and I just don't know how I forgot it. I have no idea. I can't even explain to you why I forgot. But those are fantastic movies, so I know she was fantastic in both of them.
Yeah, I think I agree with you about her grace, but I also think that she brings like a gravitas up to her that she... It's, I feel very much about her the way I feel about Jackie Chan. Like,
yeah.
And I think if I'd seen more Tony Leung movies, I would feel that way about him as well. But like, if they're in a film, number one, you know, you're going to get excellence in everything. You already know the fighting styles that they have are like mastered, but they're also so gifted at acting. Jackie Chan in a comedy space, I find him to be very, very funny all the time. Yeah. I think he's hilarious. So we can do drama and Michelle Yeoh and like every, I don't know, any space they put her in. I loved that she sort of brought that to this movie. I didn't know who she was going to be. I thought she was going to be like an older version of the mother. I had no idea, but I loved who she was. I loved that she was the aunt that's living in Talo that sort of like brings this you know, grounding to Shang-Chi when he's sort of floundering in the middle of two worlds, you know, life in San Francisco as a valet and like his whole, like his destiny, right? And so she's like, everything you've ever been through, all of this is part of you. And even like the callback to what the mom says is like, you just have to figure out how to take what your father has given you and what I've given you and make it yours. And she helps him with that. And I don't know, like, I love that she's there. She and Tony are there to, like, pass the baton and, like, give this movie the, like, every chance to succeed with their presence and their acting.
Yeah, agreed. And I love that she brings kind of, like, that motherly but also mentor vibe to her character. Yeah. Like, that's who she is. But she's also really strong and very capable and talented in her own right. It's not like she's just there, here, I'm just going to help you. Like she fully like takes care of everyone and does everything on her own throughout most of the fighting scenes. You see her just kind of take on everyone. She's like, nope, this is what we're doing. This is what we have to do. And here's how it goes kind of thing. And it's not like she hides in the background or she teaches Shang-Chi and goes, okay, that's it. I'm done. My part here is over. She continues to show how strong not just her character, but all of the women in the village are and how much they have a space, which is wonderful for Zhang Ling, for Shang-Chi's sister, because she really tells her, like, hey, your space isn't behind the scenes. You have as much space here as your brother does. So go out there and kind of do your thing.
Yeah. Which brings us to Zhang Ling, played by Menger Zhang, who this is her first film, which is mind-boggling because she's just so good.
Honestly.
And this is her first movie. Literally, no big deal.
The first time she shows up on screen, I was like, oh my gosh, I love her already. And just because she really kicks butt. She kicks Shang-Chi's butt. And it just, really? She does it like so fantastic. Like, there are moments in movies where you're like, yeah, like girl power. Like, you know, I feel all strong and I'm going to go beat up people if I needed to kind of thing. And that's exactly what I felt like when I saw Xiaoling show up on screen. I was like, wow, I can do anything. Look, she can do anything. I can do anything. And I felt so excited just having her on screen. And she did such a phenomenal job.
Yeah. And even that just first appearance where she's in the hood with like the fierce bang with the bob and like the pants and the crop top. And she's just like with the gloves, like the wrap gloves, like flipping it into Shang-Chi. So freaking good. And her fighting style is so good too. And just like, you get the feeling of those touches of like, she had been watching the Ten Rings and she had been watching Shang-Chi train. And then she's sort of like implanting her own style into it secretly in the background because women aren't allowed to train in the Ten Rings. And, and the way she sort of like translates that in her fighting is, I could watch a million times. I need her to be in so many more movies now, please.
And I love the fact that they showed her pretty much doing it all on her own and doing it so well and becoming strong enough, like becoming strong just by doing it by herself. It's not like she had, you know, her dad teaching her, or they didn't show any moments with her and her mom, at least, you know, getting any advice from her for fighting. It was all just, and I guess Shang-Chi really didn't start the fighting until after their mom was killed. But the fact that she learned it all on her own and does it so well that it's not like, you know, when Shang-Chi is fighting her, that she's like, oh, I can't hold my own. She literally holds her own and matches or surpasses Shang-Chi in her fighting. So it really is a testament to her character about how strong she is, how intelligent she is as well.
Yeah, I also think that we're entering such a beautiful era for women in the MCU. I mean, I tweeted something about to just say back about Michelle Yeoh for a second. We've got sort of like this matriarchy in the MCU building with like Michelle Yeoh and Rachel Weisz and, you know, Angelina and Selma coming in the Eternals. We've got Michelle Pfeiffer and Angela Bassett. We've got like this amazing, like matriarchal presence. But on the other side of that is this sort of like living in the gray, making the choices they have to survive kind of pack. And I feel like that's Xiaoling and Sharon Carter and Yelena. And I think the three of them don't follow the rules. They're not your typical hero. They're going to make the choice that they need to make in the moment. Because by the end of the movie, she's running the freaking Ten Rings. You know? I loved that. I was like, yeah.
I literally turned to a friend and I was like, I would like now a movie of, you know, because there were so many females or women in the Ten Rings, you know, they're fighting and learning to fight. I was like, I'd like, you know, all the women from the Ten Rings. I'd like the Dormilaje and the Black Widow, the Black Widows to form some kind of fighting posse, something. I don't even know what to call it, but I need them all to be fighting something together.
Like an lion.
Yeah.
Well, somebody actually DM'd me on Instagram after the movie, after they saw that I had seen it. And they asked me if there were Black Widows in there. And I said, you know, what's funny is I can't imagine they wouldn't find their to someone like Xiaoling or to Val. They're going to find their way. I feel like the superhero world is very small in the MCU, even though it feels very broad. People with those skills are going to find people who know how to manage people with those skills. So I said, let's just call it headcanon that there are definitely Black Widows fighting for the Ten Rings, because why wouldn't there be? I mean, Yelena found her way to Val. So,
which is funny because
I kind of am using that as a headcanon.
Yeah, which is funny because I literally sent you right before we started recording. Well, maybe not right before, but I was on TikTok and I sent you a video where somebody was like, there is actually one of, so, you know, there's a woman fighting in one of the cage matches. And John goes, yeah. Oh yeah, you got this Helen or something. Else. Yeah. So Helen apparently is in the Black Widow movie as one of the widows. And now she's up in that fight ring. And I believe she was, I'm assuming she was in the 10 ring, like practicing fighting later on at the end credit, in the end credit scene, but she was definitely confirmed to be in that fight scene, at least in the fighting ring. So yay. Your theory is correct. Yeah.
So, okay, yay. That makes me very happy. I haven't had a chance to check TikTok. This is why you should never let your TikTok DMs roll over, because there's important information in there. But yeah, I loved that scene at the end because I just thought, you know what? It's badass AF. And why wouldn't a woman step into that role and say, like, you know what? Now I can teach what I was never taught and I can take the reins and I can make it what I want it to be. And that doesn't mean she doesn't have the powers of the Ten Rings. So it's going to be different than what her father built, you know? Yeah. And I love that Razor Fist is like at her side. I loved everything about it.
And I wonder, it would be really interesting to see if her, you know, her version of the Ten Rings ever come into contact with Sharon Carter and what she's been doing, you know, because we saw her running things on in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So I wonder if at some point they might either come across each other or something might happen with those two groups. Because
that
they're
literally like, my first thought. That was so my first thought, 100%. Yeah.
Because they're both really big kind of like gangs, if you will, or they're in the underground kind of underground side of things. So it wouldn't be impossible for that to happen.
No, and I also love that, like, it's like, you know, let's not say every movie, but like so many movies and the women that are in them are bound by this sort of like morality clause that girls have to be good or bad, but nothing in between. Whereas men can have all kinds of layers, you know? Right. And I'm interested to hear what John has to say about this, especially after his feelings about what happened with Yelena at the end of Black Widow. Cause I freaking loved that for her, by the way.
Right.
But it's like, you know, it's about Sharon and Yelena and now Xialing. But then on the other, on the DC end, you've got Harley, who's a super complicated, very does her own thing, not good, not bad, not anything, primordial goop of a person. And I love that we're entering an era where, like, who cares about that morality business of, like, don't put that on these characters. They're going to make the choices that they need to make. It doesn't make them good or evil. It makes them human.
Mm-hmm. And even some of our favorite superheroes have those, like male superheroes have those moments where they've done good, they've done great things, but they've also done really bad things. You know, whether it be like Batman or the Punisher, for example, he kind of floats that line of, you know, anti-hero. So why can't women be anti-heroes as well? Like
100%. Like Nick Fury, like that dude is making calls left and right based on what he needs to make in the moment and whether that benefits the Avengers or himself, or, I mean, usually it's for the greater good, but that means having to make a tough call in the moment. And so, like, why women, you know, like, done with that. We're done with that. And I think Xialing is her whole arc, because she chooses to fight with Ta Lo. She chooses to fight alongside Shang-Chi, even though she left him for dead at the club, you know. Even though XXE, you know, she's still, that's her family and she shows up. But then at the end of the day, it's not like, I'm a good guy now. She's like, I'm going to go run this organization.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not like she hangs out reunited with Shang-Chi and she's like, oh, you know what? My brother's doing good. I'm going to do good too. She really can't change the essence of who she is. She does what she needs to, like you said, in the moment, but then eventually goes back to who she really is.
Yeah. I love also when little Shang-Chi is like, oh, my sister's closing down the operation. And then, like, next we see her, she's like baller, just sitting in the chair. and like watching everything go. I was like, that's the best thing I've ever seen. That's yeah. so good. It was and like, he's like, oh, my little sister's down the operation.
No. It was like, it kind of reminded me of like a Loki type situation where like, you know, Thor's like, yay, Loki. And Loki's just like, I'm causing evil. I'm like, you know, like kind of like twisting his evil mustache kind of thing. It just reminded me of that almost. But
yeah, and Loki is a perfect example of a character that doesn't have to live by the morality clause.
Exactly.
Okay, so next I want to talk about Razor Fist because I think Florian did. He is in a class of like the brute strength with, I would say, like Drax and I would say like maybe M'Baku would be in that list of like sort of like the delightful brute.
Yeah.
I love him as a secondhand man for Xia Ling. He was a great secondhand man for Wen Wu too. I think he's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's so funny because he's not like those, like he has moments where he's not maybe the brightest crayon in the box type situation, but he's also not completely dumb either, which is nice because sometimes we just see like the right-hand people just being like, you know, or the sidekicks kind of thing, being really lower in intelligence, and that's pretty much their whole role. And he has moments of that, but he's not fully, he's not just completely void of any intelligence. But he did make for nice, I did appreciate his, you know, random little comedic moments, like when they take his car or, yeah. you know, when they're fighting and he's like, we're not going to join sides with you. And then all of a sudden he's like, never mind, we're going to join their side now. When he notices that, you right. know, souls are getting taken, he's like, never mind, we're gonna be on your side here, we'll work together.
He takes the dragon blade and puts it in his arm. That part was so good.
They're like, oh, your weapons aren't gonna help, and he's like, yep, that is correct, this we're gonna make do with what we have here.
Yeah, I think that role could easily have been a throwaway, maybe he died, who cares, no, blah blah blah, but I think what Florian brought to it was something super likable. Like I really wanted him to survive, and I like loved when he joined Hollow against the Dweller in Darkness. Like I was happy about that. And then when he's, you know, at Xia Ling's side training the Ten Rings, I was like, yes, I'm so glad we're gonna get more Razor Fist, because I just thought he was great. I thought he was a fantastic addition.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think Marvel has really, I think if you look in the earlier days, there are plenty of those characters that are like, it merely exist, and then it's like, who cares? But they've really stepped up and added flavor into those people and like given them more than just 3 seconds on screen. And so like, I love the idea that maybe he'll be back and have more of a story. So I'm excited about that. I really liked him. I want to just talk about Ronnie Chang for 1 second, because I love Ronnie Chang and I love that he's in this movie as John John.
Yeah.
Was he Ron? I thought he was John John.
Yeah, he was John John. He was in Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah, he was. And I love that. I love him from The Daily Show, the pieces he's done on The Daily Show.
That too. Yeah. And it was just funny because he popped up and I was like, wait, this guy. I'm like, I love how like, you know, they've got a few people from other, you know, Asian movies, like East Asia, Chinese movies that I've seen before. And I just, it almost reminded me of like when you watch anything like with British actors in it, British characters in it, Harry Potter or Doctor Who, they all have like similar casts that have been in one or the other of the movies or shows. So I was like, this is kind of like, this is just what it reminded me of. And I thought it was, you know, kind of fun.
I thought it was really fun. I liked seeing him on there. Mm-hmm. Okay, next let's talk about Awkwafina, because dang, I love her so friggin' much.
Me too. Like, I love all of the movies that I've seen her in so far. She's done great comedy stuff, whether it's like Crazy Rich Asians or the movie whose that name I can't remember right now, where she, I think it's The Last Goodbye or The Long Goodbye, where she goes to go... Yeah, she goes to meet her grandma, and her grandma's really sick, but they don't tell her that she's really sick and she's possibly dying. But it's a very serious, dramatic role. And Awkwafina does such a fantastic job in that as well. Like seeing her, I saw her in Crazy Rich Asians first and expected, you know, normally when I see somebody in a movie, I'm like, oh, they're good. They have good comedic timing. That's, you know, what they might be known for. But she was great with the serious roles in that as well. So I knew coming into this, I would expect that same quality from Awkwafina. And I was not disappointed with her acting at all. And I love how, again, she brings a bit of funny, but also a little bit of seriousness where it's needed. And I just, I love that they didn't give her the role as well of the, like, you know, the sidekick that doesn't know how to do anything kind of thing. They actually allowed her to be a part of the fight. And she did a great job with it too. It's not like, it's not like she was just, you know, like, oh, I'm trying, but nothing happened. Like she had moments, especially at the end where she shoots the arrow into the mythical creature's neck and really is the turning point for the fight. I love that they gave her a role where she was able to do things and was very much part of the whole thing. She wasn't just hiding in a corner being like, I can't do this. She was very much involved.
Yeah. I also have to just preface this next thing that with like, I don't know how to say it. So I'm just going to say it and then also explain it. I ship the heck out of the two of them so much. And yet I'm also so glad they didn't go there. It's like both.
I was struggling with that. Okay. Because part of me was like, I loved that they didn't do what they always do, where it's like Awkwafina is beautiful, but she's not like that typical, I don't know how to explain it. Like it's not like a typical, tall, specific weight, height, hairstyle. Like she's not what you would consider, I guess, it sounds weird, but Hollywood-esque. She wouldn't be like a Hollywood-esque leading
She's a comedy actress, and they really have like, I think that they've pigeonholed her as like she's in comedy. So she's not traditionally, you know, beautiful in the way that Hollywood casts someone as a lead in the role. But here she is as his best friend, you know, but I really loved their chemistry as best friends. And I'm not opposed to that growing into something more, but I also could be perfectly fine. This is the sort of like, in between world of shippers, right? It's like, I could be fine with them being best friends. I love them as best friends.
Exactly.
But oftentimes, best friends grow into something more. And I would never be mad about that.
Yeah. I was watching a video a while back talking about the best friend trope where, you know, the best friend becomes the love interest kind of situation. And the person was saying that it usually... It's always awkward in some situations, or it's awkward in some situations, not always, but in some situations, because there's no chemistry between the characters there to begin with. And it just seems like it comes out of nowhere. And this is going to what you were saying, that they have such good chemistry together, kind of like a Nick and Jessica Day type situation where they're really work well as friends, but then they also could work well if they were in a relationship. But if they're not, hey, that's fine too. Like, you know, whatever it is defined as their relationship, that's whatever works, but they have really good chemistry. And I love that. And I really love, like I said, that Awkwafina gets her moment as a leading woman, instead of just being like, she was technically side character to Shang-Chi, but she's still in her own right, does her own things. Like she's driving that bus and she's doing, you know, she does a great job with it. She's terrified, but she does a great job with it. She, you know, goes into using the bow and arrow and learning to use that as a weapon and doing pretty well considering she's only learned in those few days. So I really loved that they gave her her own moment or moments in this movie than just being like, oh yeah, I'm just on the side here.
They don't pigeon her in the role of girlfriend, which, as we know, a lot of times limits the female role in a movie because it is all about the hero. She gets a hero story of her own. I mean, I love that training part with Guangbo where he's like, no. And the other woman is like, no, she's gonna go. She's gonna train. Like, get over it. And then she's like, I guess I'm carrying arrows. And like, and the whole about like my mom's telling me to pick a lane and I just don't, you guys know what you want to do and then you do it and you get really good at it. And just her sort of journey of discovering like she is good at something. And the fact that she comes along in the first place, she's like, no, you're going to explain it to me on the plane. I don't care.
Yeah.
I love that.
Exactly. She was just like, yep, no, I'm coming. And then just like, just no ifs, ands, or buts.
Would be like, no, you're going weird. Yeah, I think that they really gave her agency, which is what we all want to see. We don't want to see a character that doesn't have agency. I think most shining example in recent history is the devastating use of Rachel McAdams as Christine Palmer, and just the, you can't throw away Rachel McAdams in a movie, and they just completely girlfriended her. And she had great moments in Doctor Strange, but she got girlfriended. And I think that they tend not to do that. I think we get really strong, like Pepper's really strong. I don't want to pigeonhole her in that role, but I think like male and female on-screen best friends romance, a lot of times that leads to tropes. Mm-hmm. And I think that she transcends some of the tropes that the girls in superhero movies that are like not the quote unquote hero of the film, their name isn't on the poster. They get pigeonholed in those places. And I just don't see that happening to Awkwafina in this film. She gets her own story. She comes along for the ride. She is sassy and she takes no.
Yeah.
And I thought she was such a great addition. I want to see so much more of her. As we were saying, I'm perfectly fine with her remaining BFFs with Shang-Chi forever, but at my heart, I'm a shipper. I love ships. So I want him to have a ship. And if it's her, I ain't mad about it. Let's just say it that way.
Literally the entire time, not the entire time, but at the end of the movie, I was like, do I ship this or do I want them to stay friends? I'm like, I do really appreciate, as someone who has a really close guy, who has really one, especially one really close guy friend, I'm like, I totally hate it when people start like telling us that we should be dating when we're like, no, that's not going to ever happen. So I'm like, so I'm like, it's really difficult for me right now because I'm like, but I also do. And so it was a very tough time at the end of the movie.
But I think the difference is that in the past, it just would have been the assumption, right? It just would have been like, oh, there's a girl in the movie. That's obviously who's going to get with. It's different. Like because we understand, I have guy friends like that too. And I understand that connection where if it had turned into something, I don't know that I would have been opposed to it, but also we're such great friends. We don't need it. So it's like, that is a really special relationship that I think Hollywood has a really hard time translating because they want it to be a shipper all the time. And I think you and I are on the same page. We're not saying that it should be. We're saying like whatever it develops into or is what we want to see because it's beautiful as it is now. And whatever that becomes, a deeper friendship, you know, partners in crime or partners in heroism or whatever, we're into it. And I think that that's the distinction. And I think that's the difference between like the classic, oh, you put a girlfriend in a superhero movie, like, or a girl in a superhero movie trope, you know? So now we've saved him for not last, because there's a lot more to talk about. Leo, I'm blushing. I love him. I love him so much.
Me too. And like, I loved him when I first.
I was going to love him.
Yeah. Like, I've been a fan of him since like Kim's Convenience, and I've been like, oh, I've been in love with him since. And then when I found out that he was going to be Shang-Chi, I was like, well, I guess we're just moving to the big screen now, and my love is just going to grow infinitely more from there. And it did. I literally, like, from the minute he pops up on screen, I'm like, well, and that's, I'm number one fan here. I'm in love. Can we be best friends at the very least?
I hadn't watched Kim's Convenience, but when he got cast and I started like following him, and he's adorable on social media, like he's so precious, and I just like, he needs to be protected at all costs. But everybody, you know, I had heard about Kim's Convenience, everybody was recommending it to me, and I didn't want to watch it be Shang-Chi first for me, and I didn't want anything else to like I just wanted that to be my first experience with it. And now I'm watching Kim's Convenience now. And it's like an origin story for him, because I feel like it's his in my head. So, and I'm loving that for me, because I think he's a delight.
And it was hilarious that when he was cast and the posters were coming out for Shang-Chi, they were making references to Kim's Convenience and his relationship with his dad in the show, and being like, oh, your dad's going to be, you know, really disappointed now that you're like, you know, you've become a superhero now. Like, what happened to your role as this and that? It was hilarious seeing those memes come out. And all of the cast from Kim's Convenience just like reposting things, meaning like, these are hilarious. So I really just random little Easter egg type, or, you know, random fact, I guess.
This is what my sadness is of my deep, deep sadness in the MCU, is that he will never interact with Steve Rogers or T'Challa, because I think the three of them, and I'm going to add Sam Wilson into it, I think the four of them, but he may interact with Sam. So I'm just going to talk about T'Challa and Steve and Shang-Chi. I think the three of them are cut from the same cloth, not in the MCU, but also the person. Just the things that we've seen from them on social, kind of way they represent off screen. Chris Evans, Chadwell Boseman, and Chadwick.
There we go. Chris.
And hard, you guys. I'm on a vampire schedule. Please excuse me.
Exactly.
I think the three of them are like cut from the same hero material. Not only on screen in their characters, because I think Steve Rogers, Shang-Chi, and T'Challa are like these three heroes that are like they're not like they're so hopeful. They don't have like a dark side, though they do deal with dark elements. They're caught. They look at the world and just see in them such similarities. And then when you look at like Chadwick, Chris, and Simu off screen, and RIP Chadwick, obviously, but just who they've represented off screen and how they interact, and sort of like, and this is obviously public persona, I don't know any of them, but like just what you kind of see from them and how they portray off screen and how people talk about them, they are just like the three people that I wish I could see on screen together or in an interview together, and we'll never get that, and it just makes me so sad. I do think Sam Wilson is cut from the similar cloth, and so I kind of really deeply hope that we're going to get a Captain America Simu sort of like interaction. I can't imagine we won't. I actually really believe we will. But I just see in him like a baton passing from Steve, even though obviously a baton was passed to Anthony Mackie, but there's a different baton for me that was passed in a different way. And I'm so excited to see where he goes. I'm just so, so freaking excited about it.
And like, I absolutely love that Simu Liu he's perfect for this role. I love that he brings a bit of seriousness, but as well as comedy, and his comedic timing is fantastic. He, like, I laughed at all the parts that I was supposed to laugh at, but I also felt his pain and anger. I love that in this character, as Shang-Chi, there was a point where, right when his dad was like, oh, I know the people who are responsible for this, we're going to take them down, kind of thing. And even while his dad is telling him this, or when he was saying this to Shang-Chi's like, something isn't right here. And you would, because just the way that his mom had passed away, and that's traumatic enough having to have seen that, but to still be able to go, wait, something isn't right. What you're saying, something isn't right here. And to still not just take that anger and go to, yep, I'm going to just start killing people. Because we've seen Tony, for example, his parents were killed, and the minute he realized that it was Bucky, went completely, you know, with rage and grief and all that trauma to, you know, take out Bucky and then Steve as well. Whereas with, like you were saying, with T'Challa even, and with Simu Liu, both of them still have a level head, like are still level headed when it comes to, I guess, kind of revenge. Because at first with T'Challa, he was kind of taken with anger, to want to take down Zemo. But then when he realized what he was actually causing, he was like, no, I'm not going to do this. And Simu Liu has that similar thought process where he's like, nope, we're not going to take down a whole village just because you think that they were trying, that they're keeping mom and that, you know, they may have been the reason for her death kind of thing, or they're responsible in some way. He was still like, no, we can't do that, which I really appreciate about Shang-Chi's character.
Yeah, and kind of the way that he's like built his own life. And what's interesting about his origin story is that he's aware of the power that his father had, aware of sort of some of these mystical elements of his past and aware of his own skill as a trained assassin. And yet, like, he's like, so it's so different than so many of the origin stories we've seen where they didn't know about the power. They get the power. They have to figure out how to use the power. We don't have any of that. I mean, we have like how to meld the good and the dark within us, right? Like he's got like, how do I deal with the 10 rings, or how do I learn to fight the way that my mother fought? She's the only one who defeated him. Like those kinds of themes, but it's not a complete unawareness of that world. He knows that world, you know? And I think that that's what's so interesting about his origin story. It's so different from something that we've seen. I think it's a lot like T'Challa in that he grew up knowing about Kingdom of Wakanda and what that meant. And so I think that I kept feeling like there were so many similarities between T'Challa and Shang-Chi just as people in the MCU. Mm-hmm. And I just loved that. Like the similarities for me, having this, you know, the awareness, the agency within like the story. It was not like being slapped in the face with like brand new powers, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because, yeah, like you said, we've seen that. We've already seen it a lot. So it's kind of like Marvel taking taking their properties and changing it up a little bit, which I really appreciated. I also loved how with Shang-Chi and even with Katie, how at the moments where they're like, oh, we should do this. This is the responsible thing to do. But they're like, and then we're going to go do karaoke. I love that they included that, the whole karaoke, the entire movie. And I love how at the end, you're like, oh, okay, when they're talking to Wong, because eventually Wong comes in at the end of the movie and goes, oh, we need your help kind of thing, and takes both of them away. And Wong is like, oh, make sure you get some rest. And both Shang-Chi and Katie are like, and then they have a whole thing with karaoke with Wong, which I really loved. I was kind of hoping Wong would sing a Beyonce song, but I was like, it's okay. That's really just, it was just me wanting to have a callback to Doctor Strange. But I loved how that scene played out. And I also loved the chemistry of those three together. And I cannot wait to see Shang-Chi interact with some of the other newer characters. And like you said, Sam Wilson, even with Bucky, you know, maybe some of the other characters as well. Spider-Man, I'm sure he would have an interesting thing with Spider-Man there. But I really wanted to see him interact with some of the other characters, because I know he's already made a mark in my mind for the beginning of Phase 4 for the MCU. I'm pretty sure he would make a big, big splash with all of the other characters as well. And I cannot wait to see everyone else coming in kind of thing. It's almost like when you have new kids coming into a school and you're like, oh, I can't wait to see kind of what the school year is going to be like, or what the kids are going to be like. And almost like, it's almost like that. He's the first character that we get to see. And what are the other new students going to be like? What are the other new Marvel character is going to be like, and how are they going to interact with each other? I'm really excited to see that.
I feel like the stakes for Doctor Strange 2 are building at an astronomical rate.
Yes.
Do you feel that way?
Because I feel like, when we were talking about What If, did you watch Wednesday's episode? Before I said
I'm
anything?
Not caught up. No, okay. Not caught up.
Okay, then I won't mention what I was going to say about What If. But with, you saw episode one though, right? Yeah, we talked about it. So the Captain Carter episode, they had the little what's it called, the octopus thing. And apparently, yeah, looking into it and doing more research and stuff like that, or Donna did more research about it, it's connecting it to one of the Doctor Strange villains, Shumagorath, yeah, that's how you say it. And that was rumored to have been the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness villain at one point. So somebody else was saying the dark mythical creatures that came out of Shang-Chi might be related to Shumagorath, which could also be why there was that at the end, in the end credit scene, you have that scene where Wong is saying, well, once you started using the rings, there was a blip of like energy, and that's how we saw it at the Sanctum Sanctorum. So I'm wondering if that's kind of what's connecting a little bit to Multiverse of Madness, which would be really cool if that is the case. But yeah, it's definitely setting up what's going to, it's setting up the next phase of the MCU, essentially.
Yeah, I think with WandaVision, what's happening in Loki, obviously we saw the Spider-Man 3 trailer, which has Doctor Strange in it, and then Wong sort of bridging the gap over to Shang-Chi. I think like it's going to be insane, but I'm so excited to see it. Someone I don't remember where I saw it, but TikTok or somewhere, it was like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is going to be essentially like Civil War, like on that caliber level of number of people, stakes and everything. So it's going to be like our phase 4 Civil War, which is funny because it's coming so soon in the, like, I feel like it's so soon in the pack, even though it's not, because we have so much between us and Doctor Strange too. Like we have Eternals, we have Spider-Man, we have so much. Hawkeye, Ms. Marvel, we have so much between us and that point in time in phase 4.
Yeah, which I'm really excited to see all of that. And I know we're like, we still have, like you said, so many things to see before Multiverse of Madness, but it just keeps building. Anything that we've been watching kind of keeps building and adding more layers. And anytime we hear from, like, you know, anybody in Marvel, they're like, oh, yeah, that's going to be connected to Multiverse of Madness, or this person is going to be Multiverse of Madness. So it's just adding and compiling to the fact that there's going to be so much happening in Multiverse of Madness, which is going to be crazy, because we're going to get Spider-Man 3, which is also kind of, we're getting a multiverse there, and then we're getting another kind of another multiverse as well. So it's really exciting to see how Shang-Chi fits into that and how it's the first step towards everything else.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting about coming out of phases 1 through 3 is like this 10-year buildup is all we have to sort of reference. And now what Doctor Strange comes out in like a year and a half. And so it feels like a breakneck pace compared to where we came from, like the way they built up for 10 years. I think that's indicative of the future that we're going to sort of experience in the MCU. It's going to be quicker villains, quicker buildup. And I love that. I love that sort of like pace, because you're adding so many more characters and so many more stories. So it's going to build in a way that we haven't experienced. And I'm just so excited about that. But I wanted to also talk about, we have to talk about Ben Kingsley for a moment. Un momento.
Yes, we have to talk about Trevor. I love that.
Travis Slattery.
And I didn't know he was going to be in this movie, because I hadn't looked everything up. And like, I know some people were like, oh yeah, they gave it away here. And I didn't know about this. I found out about it after. I'm like, I didn't know he was going to be in it. And someone's like, no, but they had talked about it. There was a small short in 2014 that came out showing how Trevor Slattery.
I saw the short.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it. So I was like, what? So I came home and watched it after. I'm like, oh. So I wasn't even like, I just assumed. Yeah. So I watched it. I came home and watched on Disney Plus, but I didn't know that that's what was going to happen. So I wasn't even like, Trevor wasn't even in my mind. I mean, besides him being the Mandarin, I thought they were going to just call back like, oh yeah, this is what happened. And somebody took up my name kind of thing. But that was all that I thought we were going to get. So when they get down to that basement area and then there's Trevor just sitting there practicing away, I'm like, this is so great. And I thought it was just going to be a short cameo and that was it. I loved that he was in the entire movie and played that comic relief, literally was just comic relief. He did such a fantastic job with it. I laughed at all the parts that I was supposed to, like the part that he talks about, where he talks about Planet of the Apes and how he wanted to become an actor because he saw the apes riding the horses and was like, well, if the apes can ride horses and I can too, and not realizing that they were just people and actors in masks and costumes riding horses. He actually believes it was like monkeys. Yeah. It was like this poor sweet, yeah, it was like this poor sweet innocent man. He was just, and again, it goes back to what you were saying about how not all characters are just pure good or pure evil. Like, because in that short, even we see that Trevor is still kind of like, you know, being kind of evil, even though he's really not an evil person. He's still kind of trying to run the jail per se. It's interesting that he's such a sweet soul, but at the same time, you know, he's capable of being, you know, a little bit mean and manipulative if he needs to be, which I love that they even gave him kind of a bit of well-rounded. They gave him a backstory besides just sidekick and bumbling idiot kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, obviously a lot of people feel very strongly about what happened with the Mandarin and Iron Man 3 and Ben Kingsley and the switcheroo and the blah, blah, blah. I don't feel that way. I never read the comics. I never felt that way. But I also really appreciated, because I think of an interview with Kevin Feige talking about it, and he said around the Mandarin and a lot of different Asian, Black, any culture in Marvel has often been very on the toxic side and on the racist appropriative side. And so instead of going in a direction that was like, let's honor the comic that maybe was written in the 60s or 70s, when that wasn't a time when they're telling the best version of an excellent Asian representative story, let's strip that down, change the narrative. And I love what they did with it. I thought that they honored, they honored culture. They honored, you know, representation, and they didn't do it in a gross way, but they also went back and said, like, let's bring Ben Kingsley in and just like, let's say it, let's own it. Let's own that we tried this weird Mandarin terrorist thing. And it was, you know, cause I honestly think that they responded to a lot of the backlash about the Mandarin and then went in that direction. I don't know that they went, that it was the other way around. Maybe they'll never tell us, but I have a gut feeling that it was very much in response to backlash about people hating that storyline. And then they come out with the one shot to sort of like forgive themselves. And then now here comes Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, like completely just being like, Iron Man 3 who? And I love Iron Man 3, but like Iron Man 3 who? You know? Yeah. And so I think that it was done in the best way possible. I think Sir Ben Kingsley, he was knighted for Pete's sake. He's such a great actor. And so to give him sort of like hilarious role as like interpreter to Morris is so funny.
And
Morris
was, so I got a Shang-Chi Lego set because I was like, oh, I need this in my life. And it comes with a little Morris. And I literally thought that maybe they forgot to bring, like, send a little sticker so I could put a face on the little character. And I was like, it doesn't have a face. What's up with this? I don't understand. I was very confused, but I was like, it's fine, whatever. It's just a flying, it looks like a flying butt, honestly, in the Lego set. And I was very confused because I was like, where's the head and where's the butt? I can't tell. And then when I watched the movie, I was like, oh, it's because he has no face. Gotcha. That's why the Lego piece had no face. And I really thought that they forgot to put a sticker in there to put on the character. And I was like, Ben, okay, sure. I guess this is a Morris. What is this?
That's so funny.
Yeah. And I loved that they were still able to convey emotion, even though there was no face.
felt so strongly about if anything happened to Morris, I was like, I feel like I'm going to have to leave this movie because I'm going to be so upset, but I don't want to leave this movie.
Yeah.
I was so worried for him. I was like, nothing can happen to Morris.
I was like, I am going to cry if poor Morris, something happens to him. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be there. I'm going to cry. And there was that one scene where Trevor is like, looks like he's dead. And Morris goes over and is kind of like sniffing around him. And I was like, no, Trevor. I'm like, no, poor Trevor. And he's like, I'm just acting. I'm pretending I'm dead. And then Morris just kind of snuggles up to him to pretend he's also dead. Because Trevor's like, quick, just do the scene. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm like, I'm so happy that they're okay because I was really worried about them both.
Also, we have to talk about the creatures of Talo. I thought they were so beautiful and unique. Mm-hmm. The like sort of snow fox looking one with like the multiple tails and like the firebird phoenix-y kind of one.
Yeah.
And the horse, the ugly horse.
Yeah, and then the like the giant lion looking character, the creatures, they were humongous and wonderful. Yeah. And the fox looking one with the number of tails, the multiple tails, really reminded of me of a Pokemon character. And I was like, ooh, Pokemon character. But that kind of character with the multiple tails, are so, it's either in Pokemon, I've seen it in anime. I've seen that kind of characterization, and I know anime is Japanese, not Chinese, but it just was really interesting to see that kind of little connection there. So yeah, the first thing I was like, ooh, Pokemon, and I was like, wait, that's more in the Japanese style of things, but I was like, but cool, this is really cool.
Yeah, I loved a lot of that imagery and that sort of like mythical world and the way that they built that up. I mean, we have to just talk a moment about Talo's dragon. That every time it made eye contact with somebody, I like got teary because I thought it was so beautiful. And just like the movement, because it's a water dragon, these like sort of swirly, circular, very fluid movements were so gorgeous.
And I loved that the first time, like, it comes out and then we have Xia Ling jump and ride the dragon. I was like, oh, I'm like, I'm so happy that it wasn't Shang-Chi who like automatically was like, oh, yep, I'm the main character of the story. I'm connected with the dragon. That's it. It was both of them had that connection. And I absolutely was like, it made me so happy to see both of them have that connection with the dragon, not just one over the other kind of thing.
Agreed. I just, that whole part, that whole ending is so strong with just like the passing off the everybody sort of getting a moment. I mean, Awkwafina gets her moment when she lets the arrow fly into the Dweller of Darkness's throat. And then, you know, Xia Ling and Shang-Chi are riding the dragon and just each playing their part. I just thought that whole ending was so beautiful and just really rich. And that part, I want to talk about, we're going to wrap up in a minute, but I want to talk about the 10 rings and how cool they are. Because I think they are my favorite, like, superpower appendage, I'm going to put it that way, in ever. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Iron Man suit, Cap shield, like, Black Panther armor, Thor's hammer. I don't know, just across the board.
Yeah.
The way that they move, I love when they go, when they're wearing them on each arm, but then they go 10 on one arm, or when they extend out, or when they were like holding them against each other, they had 5. When they fly with them, I thought they were the coolest thing I've ever seen.
And I absolutely loved as well that, you know, while, especially when we see it more with him, while he's wearing the rings, they kind of, they go all the way up his arm when he's using them. But then when he's not using them, they kind of go down like bracelets. And then just sometimes I would forget he was even wearing them, and then I hear the little clinking of bracelets, and I was like, "Ooh, bracelets! I want them!" And they just look so—they looked so lovely. I literally googled places where I could get the 10 rings. They sell them in there's a whole bunch of places that are selling like artifacts or different versions of them, but you can only buy one. And I was like, "Darn it! I want 10. I don't want one. I want all 10." But I may have to just. I may have to, because one of them that where I saw it, it's like got a glow in the dark kind of thing, And I'm like, ooh, I need this. But it comes with one ring and then one necklace, like the necklace that Shang-Chi is wearing. It comes with one of each. And I was like, but I want 10 rings, not one. But it's like almost $100. So I was like, never mind. I'll take one.
Well, I know because I saw the one on Rock Love, which has like the blue sort of like design in it. And I thought that one was really beautiful. And I was like, $99. Yeah. I can't spend $1,000.
Right. Like, but I was like,
I mean, I want to.
And then there was even one on Box.
These? Oh, go.
Oh, I was just going to say, there was one on Box Lunch. They have also a 10 ring that's not as expensive, but it's still, I think, like, it still ends up being, I think, like $100 for all of them. It was something ridiculous, like, or $500, sorry, for all of them, because I think it's like $50 for one or something. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to, or whatever it was, $30, something like that. But I was like, I'm not spending $300 for 10 rings. That's, I can't justify that. I want to, but I can't.
Okay, new plan, Sheba. You buy five and I'll buy five. And then when we finally come together, our 10 rings will unite.
There you go.
I love that.
I like this plan.
And then we need a sisterhood of the dragon 10 rings.
Yes. I love it. When we can
just stories send about them forth to each other.
Yeah, exactly.
I love this for us. I want to mention there's this one scene where he takes a young Shang-Chi to identify like his mother's killer, and he's wearing this like gray double-breasted jacket with the sleeves rolled up with a black shirt underneath rolled over and the rings. That was the most badass outfit, and I want to recreate it so bad.
Can I tell you that I had like the minute Tony Leung walked on screen, I was like, why do I have a crush on this man? Why is this man very first
on him?
Yeah. First of all, why is everyone in this movie very attractive? Like everyone, even like the people, like the side characters, and just they're all very attractive. I'm like, this is I love this. I love that, you know, everyone, and it's not just because they're conventionally attractive. They're all just beautiful. Like from Awkwafina to Simu Liu to to Xia Ling, like Shang-Chi, Katie, Xia Ling, everyone, literally everyone in this movie is attractive to me.
Every person is gorgeous. Right? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I mean, it is a Marvel standard to be like, got it going on in the face area. But like, also, this on another level. It's on another level. But I want to recreate that look really badly. I want 10 rings. I'm not going to rest until I have them. I've got a little bit of a Wenwu sort of like a power hungry for the 10 rings till I can find the fashion one I'm looking for. I need them. I thought the pack was so cool and so unique. Yeah. Nothing we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like it. The way that they move, the way that he has a connection to them. And then like when they transferred to Shang-Chi at the end, I just felt that in my soul, man. Like, oof.
I definitely cheered during that part when he's just they just kind of go around him and you're like, yeah, you go, Shang-Chi, you go. And I was so excited. I cheered. I'm pretty sure I looked over to my friend and I was going to punch her in the arm. And then I was like, probably can't. Nope, that's not right. So I had to punch the air because I felt bad about punching. I told my friend after and she was like, that's OK. I would have done the same to you. And I was like, true, true. But like the other friend that I normally do it to was sitting on the other side of the theater. And I was like, darn it. It's like, you're too far.
Yeah, I loved that part. I thought it was when he makes sort of like the power ball of all 10 rings like swirling together, and then he just lets them drop. Oh, just devastating good. I just was tearing up so much at just like the power and the beauty and the strength of the film in general. Are there any other sort of like little bullet point things that you want to mention about the movie that just really stuck out to you?
I wanted to mention the mentor, the person who trains Katie, the man, whatever. I don't know his, I don't remember what his name is. Yeah. I loved him. He was fantastic. Yeah. I loved him. And I just, it really broke my heart when his soul gets taken. I was like, no, don't take him. Take someone else. Not him. And I was very heartbroken at that part. And I just wanted to say, I was hoping that he would be in the MCU a little bit more, but it's okay.
That that reminds me of the moment when they honor their dead. And I think that that was so beautiful and super rare. Like, we get Tony's funeral in Endgame, obviously, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's not really a lot of other opportunities in the MCU that they take to sort of honor or even acknowledge that they've lost like massive amounts of people, or, you know, like there's sort of like, oh, you in Laos and Sokovia, like we had a lot of dead, but there's no honoring of that, or like taking a moment. And the lighting of the lanterns, I know it's like obviously representing some cultural aspects, but I also just think it was really beautiful to take a moment and honor the fallen. And I just think that superhero movies in general don't tend to do that. And I thought that this was a really beautiful addition to this film.
And I guess one more thing I forgot to add, but I really also appreciated that the way that they were showing the respect of their elders from even before they go to Talo, where they, I think Katie's grandma talks about how they're doing honoring the dead. And, you know, even just the way they talk to each other kind of thing, like, it really was very reminiscent, or it reminded me kind of even of like how respect in South Asian cultures can be. You know, we come in, we take off our shoes, we say hello to everyone, all the elders, all the people that are there. And then, you know, if we have friends, then we go hang out with our friends afterwards. But we really, like, if you don't go say hi to all the adults that are there, they talk about you later and you get in big trouble, and your parents will be like, you didn't do that. That's really disrespectful. You brought dishonor to our own entire family kind of thing. Not actually dishonor, but just they were like, it looks bad on our family kind of thing. So I really appreciated that they showed that aspect of the culture as well, not just the mythological side of things, but just the cultural, how it is culturally from the day to day kind of thing.
Yeah, and that part where Shang-Chi goes to sit in the chair and grandma's like, no, that's grandpa's chair and we're getting ready for the Day of the Dead. And I think that just speaks to having a team of people who have lived the experience. I mean, the simple thing of Shang-Chi taking his shoes off before going in the apartment, we know that that's a cultural aspect that in America we don't, like white, boring American. And when I say that, that's not something that a lot of us are accustomed to, but we know that it's in other cultures. And so seeing it as a normal part of and it's not like, oh, you took your shoes off, you know, it's just there. And I think it's so beautifully just spread in like peanut butter into this movie, where it's just like naturally added in because you have a writing team and a directing team and a production team that knows the culture, and that's what it means to represent. That is what we're looking for. We don't want to see the garbage version. We've seen enough of it. We're done. And I just love that this movie was done perfectly, in my estimation. Obviously, I want to hear from people who are of this culture who have seen it. I would love to hear more about that. And hearing your take on it as, you know, and from your perspective, I just felt I feel so strongly about this film.
Yeah. And one of my friends is Chinese, and he was just, I think he was in tears and was just, I could hear him every 5 seconds going, yeah, oh my gosh, like getting really excited throughout the entire movie. So he absolutely loved it. But it also gave me hope for Ms. Marvel, because I'm still really nervous, because I've read a whole bunch of stuff, went down a rabbit hole after this. And went into a thing where, because I had dressed up on the weekend as Miss Marvel, and I was looking for some audios to record some videos. And there was a whole thing apparently where they're taking, and they do this a lot where, because Kamala's family is all Pakistani, they're taking a lot of Indian actors and actresses as some of the side characters as well. And I think her mom is played by an Indian. I don't know if they're going to have hijabis. And I just went down a rabbit hole and I was like, oh no, I can't do this. This is what I'm worrying about, is that they're not going to stay true to the cultural aspect of a character. And I had just watched Shang-Chi and I was on a high being like, oh, you know what? They did such a great job with this. They did it with Black Panther. Hopefully Ms. Marvel is going to also, they're going to continue that. And then I started reading those and I was like, oh no, it's fine. It's so sad that I've set the bar so low. And I was messaging a friend about the same thing. And he was like, you know what? The bar is really low. They cast a Muslim Pakistani actress. That's pretty much like if they can, you know, represent the culture and the show is good, that's the bare minimum kind of thing. And it's just sad that's how it is. And then he was kind of like, hey, you know what? This is the first thing. Hopefully, you know, if they do whatever they do here for Ms. Marvel, we'll figure out, they'll hear complaints and things and then they'll fix it. And then, you know, future things with Ms. Marvel in it will be better. And I was like, I guess, but I had just gotten my hopes up so high after watching Shang-Chi.
I want to say about that is that number one, like, you deserve the best version of Ms. Marvel. And just the way that the audience deserved the best version of Shang-Chi, we deserve the best version of that. And the old, the old thing is we're done with that. We're so done with that. And it's not like Marvel hasn't made giant missteps. They have. So as much as we're being very effusive and how much we love this, I want us to recognize that, like, you know, there are holes. There's very little LGBTQ / let's just say none representation. Yeah. There's no like major Latino star that has their own film franchise. There's only two females who have led their own big budget film. So there's a long way to go. I think that Shang-Chi is a bright shining star. And I think that there, it does speak to like, the way that I think Kevin Feige wants the future to look. I really feel hopeful about that. I think he's trying. I don't see in him a person that's like, just slap something Asian on it and let's call it a day. I see him as really digging deep. So, I mean, I don't know him, but that's just the impression I get. So it does give me hope that like the future is very bright for the like cornucopia rainbow of human beings in the world and everybody going to the theater and seeing themselves. Like, can you imagine an Endgame where it's like we're all, it's like the most diverse people in the theater, and we're all watching it and seeing someone on screen and ourselves in that person. And I just think that's the goal, and I hope that that's the goal, and it Shang-Chi makes me feel like that's the goal. And I love that about this film. You know, it's a lot of pressure to put on it, and I don't think it deserves the pressure, but it also lives up to it. Let's just say that. I mean,
agreed.
It shouldn't have the weight of the world on its shoulders, and yet it carries it beautifully when it shouldn't have to have it. So, I mean, all in all, last thing I want to say before we wrap is for me, this movie jumped to my third favorite Marvel movie of all time after two viewings. And that has never happened in the history of my loving a Marvel movie. I mean, right now it's, stands, and I have to rearrange everything after this, but it's the Avengers has never been dethroned just because of the way that my nostalgia, the way I feel about it, the way it was like the portal into the future of what could be and looking back at what's been built from that moment. Second is Winter Soldier, and third will now be Shang-Chi, because I just can't imagine loving anything as much as I love this movie. And it has surpassed everybody else besides those two in two viewings. So did you have a like, where would you put it in your would you put it in a top five, a top 10? Where are you feeling?
Oh, it's definitely top five. I feel like just the way that I felt after watching this, because this and Black Panther, it was a similar kind of feeling of like, ooh, yay, we're getting like representation. People are starting to get represented. So I feel like it's Black Panther or Shang-Chi. I don't know which one is first, because I love them both so much in the same kind of way. So I'm like, that's a hard, it's like, it's almost a tie between the two. That's cheating, but whatever, that's how it is. And then
no,
I was like, that's how it is. They're up there for me. And then probably Winter Soldier, and then maybe Civil War. I feel like it changes with my mood, that like after that, they kind of all like start to change depending on how I'm feeling.
Mine changes too, for sure. I think after more viewings, it will surpass Winter Soldier. Like I have a feeling I'm just like holding on with both hands to Winter Soldier because of how much I love Cap and how that movie sort of changed the MCU. But I think over time, Shang-Chi will overtake Winter Soldier. I can't see anything dethroning Avengers just because I have just a very special connection to that movie. And I just, it's always held the number one spot for me. But Shang-Chi just, I just was like, this has never happened, but it's my third favorite Marvel movie. Like, I want to watch it 100 times.
Oh, I know. Me too.
Oh, well, I thank you for joining me for this girls only presentation of Shang-Chi review of Guardians of the MCU episode. It was really great to chat with you, Sheba. Obviously, I want to do it more. I miss you.
I miss you too.
And if we could go see this movie together, that would just be the extra. And with our 10 rings, that would be the.
That would be so amazing. One way we make it happen. Well, I mean, it won't be in theaters at the time, but maybe we can just like watch it in like a homemade theater or something and just watch it together. We can make it happen.
One day we will see a Marvel movie together. Let's in the theaters. We will like, we'll just like go meet halfway and see a movie together. That is our goal. Yes. How about that?
That one day when manifest it and make it happen.
Yes. Manifest destiny. Well, thanks for joining this episode of Guardians of the MCU review style, ladies only. And we will catch you next time.